south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
People are always sending emails asking me about doing business in Latin America, especially doing business when your Spanish sucks. And as it breaks down, seems like about half the people that come down have a nice nest egg or retirement savings or pension, whatever, and don't need a job at all. At least at first, they say they don't, but then after a year or so, they see so many opportunities, or they just get so bored and lazy because, you know, you have cleaning ladies and maintenance guys and very cheap labor to do all that grunt work you hated doing up in the States. Then you find out you have a lot of time on your hands, and if you don't have a hobby that is all-consuming, like, for example, painting or making knickknacks, doing stained glass windows, gardening, writing the great American novel. That would be the great Latin American novel, by the way. Whatever. Then, lacking enough hobbies to keep a gringo busy, that's why a lot of us start businesses. Because it's true, after you're down here 6 months or so, you do see niches where you can make money on minuscule capital investments compared to the first world, I might add. Now, the exception to that would be on the gringo tourist trail, where your competition will be gringos. Not good. And you'll be competing with gringos for rents, too, so they'll be much higher. I'd say about half the gringos who start businesses down here do IT internet businesses, and the other half, brick-and-mortar businesses. And the question always seems to be, what kind of bureaucracy do you run up against with either one of those types? Well, with a pure IT business, there's no government interference at all. They don't even have to know about it. Why would you even tell them? Suppose you're working out of your apartment in Managua, Nicaragua, and your server, let's say, is in the UK. Let's assume you take payments by credit card or PayPal. Don't have to have the government involved in that at all. Now, of course, you'll have to have a bank account for your business. And believe me, you don't want to use a bank based in the US or a US bank that has branches in foreign countries, like, for example, Citibank, otherwise known by many long-term gringos down here as Shitty Bank. Again, stay away from U.S. banks and U.S. branch banks in Latin America. Why? Because if someone up in the States gets a judgment against you or a lien against your assets for whatever reason, they can lock up that bank account or put a hold on it without you even knowing. But you'll find out all right when you can't get your dough out. However, if it's a foreign bank that has no branches in the U.S., it's pretty much impossible for even a court order up in the States to do anything about that. The only alternative would be to come down to the Latin country, file petitions in the Latin courts. That would be having everything translated into Spanish, hiring Latin lawyers, because gringo lawyers can't try a case in Latin court and vice versa. Just think of all the trips back and forth and the logistics involved in that. Not for you, but for the party that's going after your assets. Believe me, a process like that could take years, which is why in my quarter century or more of being down here, I've never seen a case like that go to court against a gringo. And then the other question is, how do you select a bank? That's why you need a good Latin lawyer. Ask him and he'll tell you which ones are solid and good. In fact, you can't do wrong by using the bank or banks he's using himself personally and for his business. Now, if your business is relatively uncomplicated, you might not need to incorporate with an SA corporation. You could select a name for your company and use your own personal bank account. However, with the FATCA laws internationalized now, all banks are going to report you and your info back to the IRS and the Treasury Department up in the States. That is, if it's your personal bank account. However, if you hire a Latin lawyer to start an SA corporation for you, and you have that SA corporation open a bank account for you, the bank will not report any of that back to the U.S., but under FATCA rules, if you're a U.S. citizen and you're the owner, you're responsible to report that back to the IRS yourself. Because remember, there is a law that says if you own more than 10% of a foreign corporation, you have to report it back to the IRS. Now, since the name of this show is The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, and we report on the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, I can tell you that a good percentage of expats have their businesses completely off the books and therefore report to no one and no government. So is that illegal? Well, it's illegal according to U.S. law, but according to laws in other countries, it just might not be illegal at all. Now, you know, if you're a citizen of practically every other country in the world except the U.S., You're only taxed on the income you make within your country. And by the way, I understand now Brazil is joining the International Financial Big Brother Club too. In other words, like the U.S., they have laws to force their citizens to report all of their domestic and international income too. So they can tax it, of course. Whereas practically everywhere else, the governments don't care what you make if it's from a foreign source. So in Latin America, except for Brazil, if you have a foreign source of income, you don't have to report it, and therefore you're not taxed on it. That's totally legal. By the way, between 20 and 40% of all business done in Latin America is done off the books. Now, governments hate these markets because they can't tax them. They call them gray and black markets. They taint them with negatively descriptive words like that, as if they were dirty and reprehensible. However, locals just refer to them as informal markets, because business there is done with a handshake and a smile, and it's cash and carry, no receipts. All you have to do is take a walk into one of those gigantic public produce markets, and you'll see dozens, if not hundreds, of independent little sellers that report nothing to the government. That means no credit cards or checks either. Which leads me to another bunch of emails I've been getting lately. Those stories about first world pus-brained politicians, bankers, economists, and bureaucrats claiming they're going to eliminate cash completely very soon. You can be sure they're going to try to do that up in the first world. And when they do, you're really screwed. Now, the thing is, if politicians were to announce that sort of thing down here in Latin America, that gigantic 20 to 40% cash economy would grind to a halt. You could bet the protesters and lynch mobs would head straight for the downtown central square, where all the government buildings and bureaucrats are. And guess who? The little guys with the broken bottles and machetes are going to take their wrath out on. Bottom line, no politician in Latin America is stupid enough to do that. So then you naturally might ask, what's going to happen when they do outlaw cash up in the first world? They're starting to do it now, you know, with subtle and not so subtle currency controls. But you knew that already, right? And if you didn't, just go down to your own bank and try to withdraw $1,000 in cash from your own account 3 days in a row. Go ahead, try it, and you'll see what kind of poop blizzard rains down on your head. Okay, time for a thought experiment. Pretend we're 2 years in the future now. Cash has been outlawed in the States, as predicted. Let's suppose you're going to take a week vacation to Costa Rica or Cancun. Of course, you'll book that up in the States on your credit card, a package deal maybe. But then what happens when you get down to your vacation destination? That means you'll have to shove your plastic into an ATM machine and pull out the local funny money because you won't be able to get dollars out. Remember, U.S. paper money's been outlawed or eliminated. Sure, when you're out of the country, you'll be able to use your credit card at big hotels and restaurants and shopping centers, etc. But what about when you're on the street and you want to buy a little trinket? Or you want to hire a guide to go up a volcano or take your whitewater rafting? What if you want to buy a bag of coffee or some local honey from a guy on the street? And heaven forbid you have to use a public restroom because sometimes you gotta pay for the toilet paper. In every Latin city, there are hundreds of little tiendas and kiosks all over the place. Ones that are too small to have a bank account connected to a credit card swipe machine or a smartphone that can scan a barcode. And what about the parking lot attendant and the shoeshine guy? And the guy at the park selling cotton candy and peanuts? And on and on. Okay, so some of you are ahead of me now, and you're thinking, well, so what? When you land in a foreign country, you use your plastic to buy some of their funny money, and you're all set. They'll still have their paper funny money, even though up in the States, you won't have yours. Okay, then what about those Latin countries that are on the U.S. dollar? Panama, El Salvador, Ecuador? Now what? See the problem? Then there's this eventuality. When you're down here making purchases with your credit card, you'll often see a sign by the cash register that says there's a 5 to 8% surcharge on anything you put on plastic, which is why so many long-term expats don't use credit cards at all. I know what you're thinking. That's illegal. Credit card companies won't go for that. They won't tolerate it. Oh yeah? Well, if you try to fight it, you won't win. Down here, stores, hotels, and restaurants have been getting away with it for years. And by the way, here's a few tips about PayPal here in Latin America. A lot of people say, Johnny, if I start an internet business or a brick-and-mortar business in Latin America, I can use PayPal, right? Yes, you can, but there are two versions of PayPal. One version if you have a U.S.-based business, and another if you have a Latin American or overseas-based business. In that case, you can't sign up without a U.S.-based bank account. You can set up a PayPal account, all right, but you won't be able to transfer your money out unless it goes first to a U.S.-based bank account that you've set up for that purpose. Stupid, I know, but that's the way it is. And, by the way, an easy way for the U.S. government to monitor foreign business cash flows through PayPal as those funds are directed through U.S. banks. Why not have foreign PayPal business accounts linked to foreign banks? That makes all the sense in the world. But for all that foreign dough to end up in U.S. banks? Now, I don't know, but you have to wonder if Elon Musk was colluding with the IRS on that one. By the way, on a PayPal account outside the U.S., they charge 5.45% on every transaction. That's practically double what they charge vendors in the States, around 3%. Which is one of the reasons why so many business people hate PayPal. In fact, I know a lot of businessmen here in Latin America who'd like to give Elon Musk a good swift kick in the testicles. So anyway, if you use PayPal, you have to have that U.S. bank account, which is against the advice we give on this show all the time. That is, if at all possible, dump your U.S. bank accounts. So bottom line, if you use PayPal, you have to have a U.S. bank account, but that doesn't mean you have to keep it flush with money. In fact, a lot of businessmen down here who use PayPal tell me that they never keep much at all in that American bank account. They keep siphoning it off to one of their foreign accounts. But remember, every time you do a SWIFT or a wire transfer, it averages around $60. Now, it's been suggested by gringos who utilize that method to keep only around $1,000 in that U.S. bank, utilizing it as pretty much just a pass-through bank. Now, PayPal is a bit tricky too. I also know gringos who've had trouble with their PayPal accounts. In fact, I've had gringo businessmen down here who do internet stuff tell me that it's advisable to keep the PayPal account drawn down to around $1,000. In other words, keep siphoning it out to that U.S. bank account and keep that balance siphoned down too. Why? It seems that some gringo businessmen I know have had their PayPal accounts locked down or frozen. Now, one gringo friend said just read the PayPal terms of service, which almost no one ever reads, and they can pretty much lock out your account for any reason. For example, if they don't like what you're selling or too many people complain about you or your service, rightly or not, or for what PayPal might call suspicious activity, whatever that means, or perhaps you've made enemies out of your competitors and they sabotage or spam the PayPal business office to your detriment. Anyway, let's just say they can lock up your account at any time. Now, that's not to say they're going to keep your money. They can't, but under certain conditions, they can actually close down your PayPal account, meaning block out that flow of clients that are trying to pay. And that will really put a dent in your business if you've got clients on a PayPal payment plan. And that's why many gringos down here who use PayPal in their businesses don't like to keep a high balance. Speaking of doing business down here in Latin America, longtime listeners will recall that I mentioned in past shows that Chinese restaurants really stink down here. Nevertheless, they're extremely popular and the locals just love them. Oh, sure, you'll see a lot of Chinese people running them, so you think they're authentic, and in a way they are. But since there really are no health, food, and sanitation inspectors down here, oh, there are when you first get your permit to open up, but that's about it. They'll probably never come back again, unless someone dies or ends up in the hospital with food poisoning and makes a big stink about it. In fact, I don't know a single gringo or expat who hasn't been sick a number of times eating at one of those crappy Chinese restaurants. So why do they keep going back? Well, there's no alternative. If you like Chinese food, you got to either make it yourself or take a chance at that Chinese restaurant that looks the cleanest. And let me tell you, you don't want to look in the kitchen nor take a look back around the parking lot dumpster or look too closely or even pay a visit to the restrooms. And that's why I really believe they keep a 15-watt or less bulb burning in the restroom. So you really can only see muted shadows. I'd say the majority of Chinese restaurants don't even have paper towels in the restroom. Just a moldy old dish towel. Yuck. Which begs the question, do the food handlers or preparers ever wash their hands at all? Now, once when I was at one of these dumps myself, I watched a waiter lay assorted plates in front of diners, and every time he grabbed the edge of a plate, his thumb ended up touching the sauce. So, most people at that restaurant were getting the essence of this guy's thumb in every plate. What a revolting development, huh? Now, of course, in the big Latin cities, there's always a couple of very upscale Chinese restaurants. Always in very nice upscale parts of town in high-end malls. And at three or four times the price of the unsanitary dumps, the average Latin will never step foot in those joints. Even us gringos will only go there on special occasions. I mean, come on, who's really addicted to expensive gourmet Chinese food? Not me. But they are nice, clean, hygienic, and sanitary. So if you like Chinese, you've got that choice, but believe me, it's high budget. So those are your two choices. And I've always said there is a lot of room for a gringo to come in and open a Chinese restaurant that's in between those two markets. The nice upscale joints and those low-class diarrhea dens. That said, throughout Latin America, in the food courts of medium and upscale malls, you'll see bad attempts at U.S.-style Chinese takeaway kiosks. They're not necessarily unsanitary. The food just tastes like crap, like cardboard. Certainly because the food gets stale sitting in hot display cases under those lights, sometimes for hours at a time. Or maybe they have special cardboard seasoning in a bottle. Who knows? Anyway, the other day, I was in a small upscale mall in a nice neighborhood, and lo and behold, a brand new but small Chinese restaurant had moved in. Only 5 or 6 tables, but the place was decked out nicely, very clean. And I walked in, looked at the menu, popped my head in the kitchen, saw a big fat roly-poly Chinese guy cooking back there. And miracle of miracles, he was wearing gloves. Bathroom had plenty of TP, paper towels, and great lighting. The menu small, nicely done. So I checked my Imodium supply and decided to give it a shot. Man, I tell you, it was just like a nice New York or Chicago Chinese takeout restaurant. In fact, I went back the next day. No after effects, no stomach rumblings, no diarrhea derby. And I thought, hey, finally someone's done it. They found that in-between niche. And with the average plate of food being only around $6 or $7, just slightly more expensive by a buck or two than the dim bulb diarrhea dens that are practically everywhere. But still, it was missing a couple of first world touches. For one thing, they had the sports channel on TV. That's typical. And they were playing Latin music, not your typical Chinese pling-plong stuff. I mean, come on, you want to set the mood, right? Didn't have those typical angular Chinese carry-out boxes that we know so well, either. Your usual blah plastic plate with a bendable cover. Okay, no problem there. But get this. When I walked out, suddenly, the fat cook, who happened to be the owner, was standing next to my car in the parking lot, and he handed me, you'll never guess, 2 fortune cookies in the hermetically sealed cellophane wrapper, which I noted from the wrapper came imported from the U.S. Anyway, the roly-poly guy said, in Spanish with a Chinese accent, these are for you. You will understand the fortunes. They are in English. That was when I found out I was the first gringo to step foot in his restaurant. It had been open about a month. He didn't give them to his regular customers because, well, they're in English. He told me he had a whole big box that he ordered from the States, but unfortunately, they don't come in Spanish. So he said unless more gringos come in, he'll probably have that supply for 100 Chinese New Year's. So then I'm thinking the same thoughts I had 5-10 years ago. Why doesn't someone down here hire some indigenous ladies to whip up a big batch of fortune cookies in Spanish? Hell, you could get the sayings right off the internet. But no, it'll take a gringo to do that. Wouldn't that be a nice business? You make the fortune cookies and you farm them out to all the little diarrhea dens throughout Latin America. Oh, and by the way, when I said to the roly-poly guy, man, your Spanish is perfect. Are you by any chance half Latin and half Chinese? And he said, no. 100% Chinese, but he was born in Latin America. He said his parents are in the maquila clothing business, and he always wanted to have a restaurant. So there are a lot of subtle and unsubtle messages in that story. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, the menus are nice, but there were some funny typos in them. We'll try to include them in this episode's YouTube. Oh, and by the way, what about those little angular Chinese carryout boxes we're all so used to? Well, there is another niche. Okay, changing gears a little bit. You might remember in a past show I talked about how when you buy a cell phone down here, especially if it's a pay-as-you-go phone where you recharge the minutes at any one of those little kiosks, they're everywhere. I mentioned that there'll be times when you get absolutely overwhelmed with text messages and you really don't know what to make of them. I also mentioned that a lot of people turn their phones off at night or put them in another room because when text messages come in, they make an annoying tone. Well, it seems the other day I ran into a gringo who came down to my last Latin Insider seminar. That was around 3 months ago now. He's been down here ever since. And he said, Johnny, can you help me out for a second? I'm taking lessons, but my Spanish still really sucks. Can you tell me if there's anything important in my phone? I got so many text messages, I don't know what to do. I had a look, and sure enough, he had at least 50 text messages, and his memory was full. So more messages continued to come, but they weren't even registering. So, as I clicked through, here were some of the messages I found. First, a promotional ad for Alka-Seltzer. Then, one for Pizza Hut. Then, 3 different lotteries to enter, one for a car, one for a smartphone, and one for a computer. Then, there was a message that said, click here and you can qualify for a U.S. visa. Yeah, right. Then there were separate raffles to win trips to Miami, Disney World, and a Fort Lauderdale cruise. Now, to participate in any of these contests or lotteries, whatever, you have to send a text message back, and then a few bucks or minutes will be pulled automatically from your prepaid balance or minutes you have left in your phone. So if you're a rube or a sucker and you enter those things regularly, and believe me, a lot of uneducated poor Latins are rubes and suckers, in that case, your prepaid phone minutes will be tapped out in a hurry. Oh, but that's not at all. My green gringo friend had many more text messages. One was to get a professional horoscope reading. Another was to receive a daily joke. Ha ha. Then there were the usual lame offers from credit card companies. And get this, he had text messages from banks offering the best percentage on remises coming back from friends and family in the States. Such a deal, huh? But as it turns out, my gringo friend didn't happen to have any illegal friends or family up in the States sending back remises, so those messages did him no good. Then, surprise, surprise, there were messages from a company offering online English courses. Now, wouldn't that be useful? And then, funny enough, there were a bunch of evangelical Christian messages with Bible quotations and stuff. No, they weren't asking my gringo friend for money. They were just trying to save his soul. Of course, once they've got you hooked, the tithing and the asking for money part comes later. Then, crazy enough, came the sexting messages. A bunch of text messages targeting lonely hearts, promising to hook you up with the sexy guy or girl of your dreams. And on and on and on. So that's what you're up against down here when you buy a cell phone that uses prepaid minutes. Though not so much when you buy a regular plan for a year or an 18-month contract. So why is that? Well, if you're on a monthly fixed plan, text message advertisers can't subtract money from your account because you don't have one. You're not prepaying for anything or loading up a bank of minutes for them to draw on. So much for those text messages. Though I did tell my gringo buddy, going through them and weeding them out is a good way to bone up on your Spanish. They're simple, direct, and in common use all the time down here in Latin America. So I said, why not write those messages down just to learn your Spanish? It'll help. Kind of like trying to slog through the classifieds in a Spanish newspaper. A great way to pick up Spanish vocabulary and common phrases. And what else did we learn by going through his text messages? That they're not important and all they're trying to do is suck money out of you. However, something very weird has been popping up in text messages lately. All throughout Latin America, governments have been passing laws saying that when you buy a chip for your phone or you buy a new phone, you need to show a copy of your DPI, your national ID, or your passport. Kind of a light version of the Know Your Customer law at banks. So why have they enacted those laws? They believe it's a way to stop extortions over phones. Because you see, Latins are so free to give away their personal data, email, home address, WhatsApp, and telephone numbers every time a pop-up window asks for that stuff. Well, as a result, bad guys and gangbangers are taking advantage of that. Not to mention, young Latins are noted for posting every Happy Meal and every abnormal bowel movement on social media sites. And bad guys get a hold of that stuff and start playing extortion games over the phone. But do note, I don't know of a single gringo this has ever happened to. It's a Latin thing. First of all, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, almost no one speaks English, so extortionists are generally going to go after weak, vulnerable people who speak Spanish. Again, people with low profiles are almost never targeted. So anyway, Latin Congresses have passed laws to force phone companies into a Know Your Customer mode. That way, supposedly, if there's a phone extortion, the phone company can track the owner of the chip by ID or passport and figure out who the extortionists are. Good luck with that idiotic plan. Have you ever heard anything so stupid? You think a bad guy's gonna give up his ID to a phone company? Duh. That's like asking a gangbanger to register his guns. Yet more proof that Congresses worldwide have shit for brains. So when you buy a chip or a phone, you have to give them a copy of your passport or national ID. However, there are little mom-and-pop kiosks all throughout Latin America where you can buy SIM cards and they don't ask you for anything. And so just recently, a lot of Latins and gringos who bought SIM cards that way without an ID at all are starting to get text messages from the phone company saying, you must send your DPI, that would be your national ID number, or your passport number by text message to us. Then they give a code or we will shut off your phone. Now, like I said, this is a very recent thing. And guess what? I'm getting those text messages too because I have what I call naked SIM cards too. Yep, for anonymity, it's the only way to go. So here's the plan. For now, don't pay attention to those text messages threatening to cut off your phone if you don't give up your ID. So when should you worry? Don't worry unless they actually send you a text message saying they're going to cut you off on a certain date. You got that? On a certain date. Because the reality is there are tens of thousands, even millions of people who have naked SIM chips. In fact, there's a huge percentage of people out in the boonies who can't read and write, yet they have cell phones. So what's that mean? They can't read those messages. So how are they going to enforce that? Now, if by chance they try and give you a cutoff date, send them a national ID number or a passport number. Doesn't have to be yours. Doesn't have to be anyone's. Just send a number. This is Latin America. All they need is numbers on some paperwork. So is it illegal? What's illegal about it? It's the phone company that's supposed to collect that data. Again, if push comes to shove, give the phone company a number. Come on now. You're down here now. You've escaped Big Brother up north. You got a small footprint, a low profile. Let's keep it that way. Oh, and I forgot to mention another text message on my gringo buddy's phone. It said, visit the, quote, as seen on TV stores, and then it gives the locations. And yes, the words as seen on TV are in English. What? Now, you longtime listeners might remember all those as seen on TV offers for useless dust-gathering junk like Ginzu knives, kitchen magician, the clapper, buns of steel, ab masters, pocket circumcisers, etc. All those commercials and more are down here now and on heavy rotation. Translated into Spanish, of course. And because the parcel post delivery system in Latin America is not very dependable, someone had the smart idea of opening as-seen-on-TV stores throughout Latin America. So now, undereducated rubes and dupes can buy that stuff in person. They don't have to mail order it. Oh, and by the way, do you want to know what the most popular item is right now? The trim belt. Yep, it's English, the trim belt. They run those ads 20 times a day on every TV channel. It's actually a Velcro corset that sucks your gut in so that you have an hourglass shape. They're unisex, too. Now, that says a hell of a lot about the overweight and obesity problem here in Latin America. So I'm thinking, if you wear one of those corsets and you hook up with someone, what happens if things get intimate? I guess you do like the Chinese and put 15-watt bulbs in your house. Oops, getting to the end now. Don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com and check out master blogger John Galt. I'm on there, too. And do check out my YouTube site for the slides that go along with the show. Finally, to get on the early bird discount list for my upcoming July Expat Insider Seminar, send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.